From inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer! And somehow it's answered.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Ben Shulman, Owen Valentine, and Ben. Did we ever think we would actually get to this point? It's happening. We've reached it. Syracuse football starts this weekend. I'm not sure I ever set in stone that this could actually happen, but here we are. We're only less than 48 hours away from kickoff. Syracuse at UNC Saturday at noon, and we get to talk Syracuse football, and it's not in theory. It's not in practice. Barring something crazy, barring something miraculous, we are talking Syracuse football that is going to happen on Saturday. Wow.
I almost am still nervous because there's like that 36-hour window here to say it, but I think I can say that we've made it. It's pretty crazy to think about where we were just in early August when the Big Ten and Pac-12 stuff started coming out. And there were even – I mean, it turned out to be false later, but some major – sources that said that the ACC was going to stop. And it really looked like football, at least in the fall, wasn't going to be a reality. And while it may not be an 11-week reality, we'll have to wait to see on that. There likely, almost 100%, will be football this Saturday. And it's going to be awesome to watch. Just to sit back and watch a regular Syracuse football game. Obviously, there's a lot of things that can't be ignored that are irregular going on right now, both in COVID and social justice. But to just see Tommy DeVito drop back and hopefully not get sacked will be very fun. I can't wait.
And Ben, there's been a lot of news this week. I mean, starting with just a few hours ago, the Chris Blake news that he will not be granted an NCAA waiver. I know the Syracuse faithful, us included, were just egging on the NCAA, just give us a result. Let us know. I don't care if it is giving him the waiver, if it's declining him the waiver, just let us know. We're the week of a game. Let Syracuse know what's going on. So his waiver, unfortunately for the Orange, was not granted. So he will sit barring a successful appeal, which I don't anticipate him really even attempting to get. But there's going to be a couple of other names that were left off of that week one depth chart for Syracuse that came out after Coach Babers said that you're just going to have to wait and see. I'm not really talking depth chart until after the first game, but this depth chart came out, and some of the big names not listed, Abdul Adams, Jarvion Howard, both running backs, Dakota Davis, and then Terrell Richards. So a couple of big names missing out there. Obviously, your 1 and 2 running back opting out of the season, choosing not to play, is going to play major dividends in terms of shaking up the offense. But, I mean, it's something that Syracuse is going to have to deal with. It's something other programs are going to have to deal with, and it's just a reality of this crazy COVID season.
I think you hit it on the head there. Every team is going to have to deal with this. It's for Syracuse, it's Jarvion Howard and Abdul Adams and the other guys. And for North Carolina and for Clemson and for Notre Dame, whether it's opt-outs or it's people who get sick mid-season or people who instead want to pursue other things, maybe in the terms of social justice, everyone is going to be changing this year rapidly. The rosters are very fluid, and it's just going to be the new reality of 2020 college football. I mean, how many times have you heard something is unprecedented in the last 6 months? It makes me want to hit myself in the face. But it's
in these unprecedented times.
Yes, in this unprecedented time where Chris Elmore is playing left guard, we will have to see what Syracuse football is going to do, but they seem to have a good attitude. I like about a month ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, when there was still a lot of discussion about whether the season was going to happen, you know, Tommy DeVito said, we're just going to go in and practice. And whether the season happens this year or it happens next year, we're going to train. And that's the attitude that a football team has to have, because honestly, no game is guaranteed going forward. And the more that teams can just stay in the moment and deal with who's there, you know, Abdul Adams and Jarvion Howard are no longer even really part of the program because they declared for the draft. So now Jawhar Jordan's the running back. He's the first stringer. Markenzie Pierre is the second stringer. And that's the way it is. And Syracuse, I think, will find it a way to adapt. Of course, the losses are big. I actually don't think running back is the biggest area that they got hurt. But they're going to manage like other teams are going to manage. And 22 to 25 starters are going to go out in the field, and they're going to play football.
Yeah, I don't think the running back issue obviously hurts because it's your one and two and completely mixes up the system. But I think the Blake not getting his transfer and then the loss of Dakota Davis is really what could be that biggest impact in terms of shaking up the offensive line that struggled so much last season. It seemed like those last few games in the 2019 campaign, they started to figure it out a little bit. The sack numbers declined significantly. DeVito only sacked 1.7 times per game in those last three games. So they started to figure some things out in terms of a little cohesion on the offensive line. And we thought we were going to see Syracuse return four of those guys back, plus the addition of Chris Blyche. And that's just not what you see now with Davis opting out and Blyche not getting his transfer waiver. It really mixes things up. And the big mix-up is big boy Chris Elmore, our favorite, the most versatile player in football history. Chris Elmore, he's played on the defensive side, he's played tight end, he's played fullback, and now he's an offensive lineman. This guy has been everywhere, and you know, the rumors amongst the team say he's picked it up well, but I can't imagine that it's going to be the most fluent transition you've ever seen. But it just goes to show, I mean, Syracuse has had issues in terms of depth. And I think actually I'd like to correct myself. I think Davis is struggling with an injury still, not entirely recovered. We're not sure if it's an opt-out or still injury recovery at this point. So maybe he can return at some point in the season, but until then, this O-line is a little bit shaken up and will once again, I mean, there were question marks around the O-line going into the season when we thought we knew the five guys that were going to be starting at the O-line, and now there's a bit of a shakeup. So some more question marks around a questionable unit.
For sure. As you said, this was supposed to be something that Syracuse was not 100% was expected to improve upon, though. Mm-hmm. There was going to be a more experienced offensive line, and it still is a slightly more experienced offensive line. Instead of, you know, Matthew Bergeron, who ended up starting last year as a freshman, now he's starting as a sophomore. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you have to put the human Swiss Army knife Chris Elmore in there, there's going to be a learning curve. And I think the good thing, and what I'm not worried about, is run blocking. We've seen him run block. It's a little different from the backfield, but he's got a foundation there. But pass blocking could be a challenge, and maybe in this first week Dino Babers is getting the ball out of the hands of Tommy DeVito quickly. If I'm Dino Babers, that's what I want to do, because the offensive line probably will have enough trouble protecting just because they struggled last year objectively, and they're hopefully going to improve, but you know, they're not going to make a leap into the elite offensive line. So I'm expecting a lot of quick screens, slant routes, you know, just little things to get DeVito into a rhythm. And then they're going to have to run the ball. You know, you can't hide it. They just have to hope that the line can beat the opposing line, in this case, North Carolina, and a very talented opposing defensive line, because regardless of the losses they have on the O-line or in the running back room, you can't win games if you don't run the football effectively. And you and me were both talking about it. I think they can run the ball effectively with these two running backs. The line does their job. We've seen flashes from Jawhar Jordan, and he's a pretty exciting running back. I think he can do a lot pass catching, as well as being potentially a three down back rusher, or maybe coming in later in this year.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what the new Sterling Gilbert offense, when you pair his ideas with Babers' ideas, obviously coming over from McNeese State as a head coach. So he's got a lot of ideas, a lot of experience in running an offense. So interested to see how that pans out. Plus, obviously, Tony White in the 3-3-5 on the defensive side of things. For more on that, we caught up with a few guys a couple of weeks ago. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts or on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. We've got all our episodes on there, as well as all our insights on the most pressing news in terms of Syracuse athletics. So at Ostrom Avenue Pod, you can find our episodes there or wherever you get your podcast. It's the Tony White episode, really in-depth, really good content in terms of what is the 3-3-5 and what is there to know about that going into the season. And there are questions in terms of how will that work. I mean, with the weird off season and not as much time as you would typically have in terms of acclimating to a new defensive coordinator and a new offensive coordinator. So I'll be interested to see how Syracuse reacts to that. And I'll also be interested to see how Carolina and ACC opponents react to that, because there is still a lot up in the air about that. And to kind of provide us with a little more insight on what's going on Syracuse-wise, what's going on looking ahead to UNC, Ben caught up with Matt Hosworth once again, our recurring guest from CNY Central. He's a sports anchor over there, gave us a lot of good stuff and a lot of continued excitement for the reality that is Syracuse football this weekend.
We had him earlier to talk recruiting. Now we get him back to discuss some real on-field action. I'm joined by Matt Hosworth, sports anchor for CNY Central. And Matt, first, I want to take you back to August 10th. This is when the Big Ten and the Pac-12 were closing down, and there were a lot of rumors that the ACC might go as well. How shocked are you that we're here now, given the emotions that people were experiencing then?
Well, Ben, it's good to see you again. And, you know, obviously, I think, you know, the Big Ten, the Pac-12 probably assumed that every other league would follow them. And that wasn't the case, because we all know with the SEC and the Big 12, you know, football kind of leads the way. And everything else is secondary, unfortunately, but that's just the way it is. The ACC, you know, they followed suit and they figured, you know, that they were in a different situation. They had northern teams, southern teams. And it just, you know, I think altogether everyone said, let's try to make this work. And hey, I think they made the right decision. The Big Ten now, you've noticed, is backtracking a little bit. They might try to start in October. I think that's going to be a little bit too late for the other leagues. And it might be interesting down the stretch to see if the other leagues maybe wait for the Big Ten winner to see if, you know, they can fit them in the college football playoff. Who the heck knows? We're just making this up on the fly as we go, right?
Definitely. And as someone who covers the sport, of course, this is incredibly important to you. It's part of the way you make your living. What has this kind of emotional roller coaster been like over the last month? Have you been optimistic, or were you just kind of going with the flow?
Yeah, you know, going with the flow, I think my boss, Nico Tamurian, and I have been talking on a almost daily basis just about, okay, if this doesn't work out, then what's our backup plan? And what's our backup plan if that doesn't work? And then if that doesn't work, what's the next backup plan? there's just never enough backup plans you could have to make sure that you get some sort of good quality sports content on the air. With that being said, I mean, I feel like we've done a good job through these last 6 months just to make sure that there's, you know, we're offering something interesting when it comes to sports, whether that's a feel-good story, whether that's a human interest story, whether that's, you know, holding out hope that there will be a football season or there will be fall sports altogether. Obviously, at the high school level around here in New York State anyway, they just pushed it back to spring, football season and volleyball season. But then you're going to have sports like soccer and cross country playing just a few weeks. So it's good that things are starting to, you know, get underway here. I know the last few weeks, obviously, we've had professional sports, but you know, around here anyway, we live off this, you know, Syracuse University sports, and to have football back is going to be tremendous. Even though there's going to be nobody in the stands, it's going to be a lot of fun.
So we're taping this Thursday, and barring something catastrophic, football will kick off in 2 days. Was there a specific day that, or a specific time that you said, you know, I think this is really going to happen? You started to get confidence that we were going to be able to get here?
Yeah, I'd say probably late August is when I really felt good about it. You know, the ACC had held firm several times, even though other conferences had you know, fallen off and said that they weren't going to play until the spring. The ACC was kind of waiting on what the SEC would do in the Big 12. You saw those conferences saying, hey, the heck with them, we're playing. And I was really happy with the fact that the ACC said, you know what, let's do this. Let's try to make it work. I wasn't surprised with the ACC wanting to play. I just felt like, I mean, let's be honest, the root of all evil is money. And when there's that much money on the line and advertising revenue, you know, you're going to find a way to play. So, you know, obviously the Big Ten, the Pac-12 decided to do what they did. And listen, I mean, you can't fault them either way. I mean, you know, they have the health in everyone's best interest. And I think that's probably the, you know, the way everything should be. But at the same time, I mean, you know, we can't just stop life altogether. And, you know, we've been dealing with this for a long time. New York State's COVID rate is below 1%. Things are trending in the right direction here. Obviously, every other state can't say the same. But I think for right now, this was the right decision to make. And you're going to see COVID-19 protocols in place for every single game. And I think these leagues have a good plan in place. Yeah, there's going to be some outbreaks. Obviously, there's going to be players that can't play in these games. But I think, you know, all in all, I think they've got a good plan going forward.
It took Syracuse at least a little bit to iron out that plan. Of course, there were a few practice sit-outs from the players. And in general, just an atypical training camp that started when spring camp really got canceled. What are your expectations for SU coming out onto the field in this first game after what's obviously been their least time on the field in recent memory?
Yeah, you know, this is the one time in my career where, you know, dating back to when I was covering West Virginia University football in the Big 12 and now covering Syracuse University in the ACC, this is the first time I've never gone through a preseason camp and seen the team getting better each and every practice, seeing big players making big plays in these scrimmages and just having some sort of idea going into week one, knowing, you know, the guys who are going to step up and lead the way. I literally have no idea what we're going to see on Saturday. And I've never felt that way about a week one game. So, you know, I think a lot of people are really curious to see what this Syracuse team looks like. Obviously, there were some opt-outs. There were some guys who ran into the law, and you know, they're going to be without some key pieces. But I think there's going to be a lot of teams without some key pieces this year, because this year is just kind of different than the rest. That's a good way to put it. So, you know, I think altogether going into this week, this is a really difficult matchup for Syracuse. This is a North Carolina team that has a bunch of first team all ACC performers. And that offense, when they're clicking, man, it's going to be tough. Syracuse is going to have their hands full, but listen, I think they can hang with them. I'll tell you, I we had our preseason picks last week, and I had, you know, before I found out about the running backs deciding to opt out and then Tyrell Richards, a starting linebacker, not playing, you know, I had them going 7-4. Like, I thought this is a team that could absolutely make some noise. And I think, you know, the ACC never gives love to the teams up north. It's always about, you know, who's on Tobacco Road, who's down in South Carolina, who's down in Florida. And for good reason. I mean, those are the teams that bring in the best recruits notoriously in this conference. But, you know, Syracuse has some good pieces. If Tommy DeVito can find that confidence and this offensive line can start to gel, this is a team that absolutely could finish, you know, middle of the pack in this conference, if not even higher.
DeVito will be working with his second offensive coordinator in as many years as the starter, as Sterling Gilbert takes over the role. And on the defensive side, Tony White takes over as the new DC. Do you see this as a disadvantage to Syracuse that they've had two new coordinators come in during this weird offseason, or an advantage because teams don't know what they're going to get?
Man, that is a great question. I think you could view it two different ways. You could view it, yeah, Syracuse hasn't had time to work with these guys hands-on. These players haven't had enough practice, enough reps with these new offensive and defensive coordinators that it could trip them up when it comes game time. They don't know exactly how these coordinators work. They haven't, you know, gone through the amount of reps that they should have gone through in the spring, and that could bode, you know, that could be trouble. However, at the other side of this, you hear these players talking, you know, during these Zoom calls each week, and they're saying that they, you know, the offensive guys love Sterling Gilbert. He's got a ton of energy. He enters the, you know, these meetings, and he's like screaming at the top of his lungs, like, who's ready to go, you know, that sort of thing. And that, you know, that's good to see. It brings in new life to the quarterback room and the offensive room. You look at Tony White, and this is a different defense. And this is a 3-3-5 stack defense that, you know, when I, my days at West Virginia, they ran that under Jeff Castile, the same defense. That rover position is special. It's like a hybrid of a safety and a linebacker who comes downhill and smacks you in the mouth and is fast enough to go back there and pick off passes. I think Syracuse has the defense to make that work, especially that, that, you know, they're not going to be running a front four since it's a 3-3-5. They only have three players on the defensive line. I think they've got the power up front to get a pass rush with three guys. And, you know, they're going to have a bunch of guys in the secondary ball hawking. This is a team, I think, with Andre Sisco, especially in that defense, they're going to be able to, you know, week one, be able to execute this defense very well. So I think these two coordinators, you know, without having enough time, are still going to be able to get the most out of these guys. Is that going to equate to a win? If you're asking me, I highly doubt it. This North Carolina team is the real deal. I think Syracuse has been able to respond well under these trying circumstances. We got to remember, every other team is in the exact same boat that Syracuse is in.
Thinking back to the times that you watched the 3-3-5 at West Virginia, how do you think Sisco fits into that rover position? Because he said recently that's where he's been practicing primarily.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's perfect. You look at him, he almost looks like a linebacker. I mean, the guy is enormous. But I think that's the type of player you need to have in that rover position. You have a big, bulky guy that looks like a linebacker but plays like a safety. You know, that tweener position where, you know, he doesn't he doesn't quite look like your prototypical linebacker, but he might be slightly bigger than a safety. And that's the perfect player to stick in that rover position. I think, you know, this is the type of defense where you need some time to figure out how you want to run it. Unfortunately, Syracuse wasn't afforded that time. I think that will, you know, work against them as the season gets underway. But when you cannot discount the fact that when you have a leader like Andre Sisco, that is going to really bode well for you, especially at that position that's so important. I mean, he's running up to the line of scrimmage. He's a blitzer. He's a guy who drops back into coverage. He's all over the field. He's kind of like a midfielder in lacrosse. I mean, he's all up and down the field constantly. I think that Syracuse has the pieces in place to make this defense really sing. But, is that going to happen from the start? I don't know. If it might take a few weeks, especially they're on the road at UNC, at Pitt, two very difficult games. I think that you could see this defense really starting to click midway through the year.
So you mentioned earlier some of the opt-outs, and that was big news Monday when Dino Babers, after dipsy-doodling his way around some practice questions, released his depth chart. There were six notable names left off it. I'm going to break them into three different groups. First, the offensive line. Chris Bleich, the Florida transfer, didn't get the waiver, or has not at least gotten the waiver yet. And Dakota Davis, the right guard last year, is not there. There's the running backs, of course, Abdul Adams and Jarvion Howard. And then the defensive players, Tyrell Richards is not there, and Cooper Dawson opted out well before a lot of these players were off the depth chart. Which group do you think represents the biggest loss? The offensive line, the running backs, or the defensive players?
Oh, running backs, without a doubt. Nobody knew those two weren't there. You know, there were some rumblings. We hadn't seen any pictures or video that the university was supplying us. No pictures of Abdul Adams, your feature running back. No pictures of Jarvion Howard, your secondary running back, who could very easily be your number one running back. And I believe Stephen Bailey of Syracuse.com brought it to Dino's attention a couple of weeks ago and said, hey, you know, we're not seeing these guys out there. Like, what's going on? And Dino's response was, well, you got their cell phone number. Call them. Figure out where they are. So that really goes to show. I mean, he didn't want to give it away. He didn't want to be the one to say it, but figure out on your own. And we found out with the depth chart, those two, man, that is a big stinking loss. If you were to lose Abdul Adams, okay, you'd still have Jarvion Howard. But the fact that you lose your top two running backs, powerful running backs, I mean, these guys, I mean, knock the daylights out of people when they run. That's going to be tough to overcome. Jawar Jordan, mind you, I think is ready to be an impact player. I don't think he's ready to be the feature running back as a redshirt freshman, but you know, that was something that was unexpected. Nobody saw that coming. I think there were some whispers about it, but you know, once we saw that depth chart, that running back rotation, ouch, took a big hit. You know, the offensive line obviously has things to work on, and without Chris Blake, I mean, we could sit here for the next 24 hours and discuss why the NCAA is so ridiculous about not being able to give Chris Blake a waiver. Not even a waiver, just let him know if he can play this year or not. Like, he has no idea. But knowing the NCAA, they'll probably announce it, you know, the morning of the game. Who the heck knows? But, you know, that's a big loss as well. But those running backs, not having those two, holy cow, that's going to be really tough to overcome.
Let's flip it now and focus on UNC. They went 7-6 last season, won the Military Bowl. They entered this year number 18 in the country, and some have them as a contender to make the ACC title game and potentially even upset and win it. How good do you think this Tar Heel team is?
Oh, very good. I mean, you look at these two of their skill players, Michael Carter and Daz Newsome. I mean, these are guys who put up yards, put up big numbers. They get in the end zone. And honestly, I mean, where does it always start? It starts with the quarterback. It starts with Sam Howell. This kid, as a true freshman last year, came up huge and just lit up the ACC. I mean, he was a great, great quarterback at such an early age. I mean, what did we expect from him his second year? He's going to be even better. And he's got a bunch, you know, he's got the guys on you know, the all-ACC team to prove it. He's got Daz Newsome, a first-team wide receiver. He's got Michael Carter, an all-purpose back. I mean, the guy catches balls out of the backfield. He runs between the tackles. He can bounce it to the outside. I mean, this is going to be a very difficult challenge for Syracuse, especially on the road. I know without fans there, it's not going to be a true road environment, but still, it's in a stadium that you don't know, confines that you don't know. Things are different. You're not at home. You're sleeping in hotels. Things, you still feel like you're on the road. You're just not going to have, you know, 60,000 screaming fans on top of you. This is a Carolina offense that's very good. Is Carolina a 22-point favorite? I don't think so. I think Syracuse is going to be able to score some points on that Carolina defense, but I would look for Carolina to win this game and win it easily.
You mentioned Sam Howell and just the spectacular year he had as a true freshman, 38 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Is it realistic of us to expect him to surpass those numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is – you look at, you know, the top five. I got the list right here. ACC Player of the Year, Sam Howell, number 3 on that list, behind 2 Clemson players, Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne. I mean, he got 1 first-place vote, but still, obviously, you're not going to beat out Trevor Lawrence. But the fact that he's being regarded in this group as a true sophomore who's only played 1 year in the ACC, I mean, that's saying something. I mean, this kid is – the real deal. You know, I think he's going to be an NFL quarterback one day. And Mack Brown, I mean, man, he's really turned that program around in just, you know, a year or two. It's been remarkable to see what he's been able to do. The other player that we haven't even mentioned is Chaz Surratt, the, you know, the all ACC linebacker. This kid is just all over the place. He's going to be a very difficult matchup for this orange offensive line that obviously has its own issues. But Tommy DeVito is going to have his head on a swivel. He was sacked so many times last year. And if they don't put a body on Chaz Surratt, then holy cow, Tommy's going to feel the wrath quickly down in Chapel Hill. So he's got to make sure, you know, he steps up in the pocket, throws with confidence, and, you know, looks those receivers open, because we know, you know, last year, Tommy, that was not his best foot forward. The offensive line obviously had a lot to do with it, but Tommy, he's got to build that confidence, especially with that offensive line and his receivers, to make sure he can deliver the football down the field with confidence and get everybody involved. This is going to have to be a group effort for this orange offense if they're going to have success this year.
They're 22-point favorites, North Carolina. So clearly, if Syracuse won, this would be a pretty major upset. What do you see as a pathway to get there? Is there a pathway to get to there where Syracuse – returns home 1-0.
Yeah, I think it's the defense. Syracuse is going to have to rely on its defense all season long. This is an offense that still has its issues, especially without its top two running backs. This is going to be tough to watch. And it's going to be tough to watch at times this year. This is a Syracuse team that will hang its hat on defense all season long. If they can get stops and give the offense favorable field position to work with, then yeah, you know, I think they can hang around in this game. I don't know if they could actually win this game, but you never say never. I mean, nothing's impossible. But this Syracuse defense is going to have to play big. I mean, they are going to have to come up with stops. I mean, you're going to have to pick off passes. You're going to have to try to sack Sam Howell. You're just going to have to make sure this defense is playing the best it can possibly play. Because I don't think if the offense were to play at an extremely high level, I don't think that could be the only way they win this game. I think the defense has to stand on its head and has to give the Syracuse offense favorable field position to make sure they can get in the end zone, because field goals are not going to cut it in a game like this.
We spent a lot of this time talking about such an unusual offseason. And win or lose, really, how much should we take away from the Syracuse performance when thinking about it over the course of the season?
Listen, you're going to have to take it with a grain of salt. I mean, I don't think any head coach should be considered – you know, if they have a bad season, they should be considered, you know, to be on the chopping block. I mean, nobody is going to battle with, you know, all of their troops, right? I mean, it's all these coaches are dealing with something, whether it's, you know, players who opted out, or, you know, whether it's a situation like Syracuse had where, you know, one of their guys ran into the law. You know, there's things that happen over the course of a season. This year, there are a whole lot of things that are happening over the course of a season. Who the heck knows if we even get to week three? You know, maybe there's some massive outbreak at these schools and these teams can't play. I mean, you know, what are we going to do? You know, so this is going to be a week by week basis. Things are going to change constantly. I mean, I could see Syracuse go, you know, who knows, you know, having half of their backups starting on their offensive line by week three because, you know, they have guys who came down with COVID and they're going to have to sit out for a week or two. You know, this, you can't blame a coach for having a bad year during a year that's already been a bad year. So I think, you know, Dino Babers, regardless, is going to get a pass on this year, and he deserves it. And this is a very likable guy, a guy that's, you know, enjoying some of the best recruiting Syracuse has had in a very long time. And, you know, he's only, you know, he's less than a year removed, or just over a year removed from a 10-win season. You know, give the guy a little bit of a break here. I mean, you know, obviously we all want to see Syracuse, you know, back in, you know, top-tier bowl games and, you know, in contention for an ACC championship. But these are things that build over time. And I think, you know, I think I speak for most Syracuse fans. They have the right guy in place. There's no reason to try to rush this. You know, just let Dino do what he does. If it's a bad year, let's just scratch it up as, you know, this 2020 was just the worst year any of us have lived through. And we'll get to next year and see, you know, what happens. But the fact that anybody would call for a coach's job after a year that we've already endured, that's just ridiculous. I think every coach should get a pass regardless of what their win-loss record is.
All right, before I let you go, I need a score prediction. Syracuse, UNC, noon on WAER. What do you got?
Okay, like I was saying earlier, I think it's going to be ugly. I got Carolina 38-20. And I think Syracuse will try to keep it close early on. They might be down by a touchdown at the half. But second half, they're going to wear down. And, you know, this Carolina team, they have so many different weapons. You know, I want to say that Tommy DeVito and this offense will keep pace. But, you know, if we're basing it off what we saw last year, no, they're not going to. And listen, we haven't seen what this team's capable of. We haven't, the media, you know, for good reason, obviously, hasn't been invited to these practices. Nobody knows what they look like. Nobody knows if, you know, Taj Harris is the second coming of Marvin Harrison. Who the heck knows? I mean, there's so many unknowns that we, you know, we need to just kind of wait and see, you know, what this team can be. And, you know, I don't think it's going to be a fair assessment after week one. Syracuse going against a top 25 nationally ranked team. You know, I think they're going to get beat pretty good. The second week, I think we'll find out a lot more. Pittsburgh-Syracuse games are always really close. These are really good games between, you know, a couple of old Big East conference teams. But week one, this is going to just be a really difficult matchup. And listen, if Syracuse proves me wrong, then I will stand on my head and you know, say kudos to you guys. But, you know, for right now, if I'm looking at it on the surface without going to any practices and seeing any of these guys up close and personal, I think it's going to be a long day for the Orange.
Matt, a pleasure to have you on again. Hopefully we can reconnect a few weeks down the road and the season is still going and maybe SU has picked up a couple wins along the way.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Let me know. You got my number, so just reach out.
Another thank you to Matt Hosworth for the always wonderful insight. First recurring guest on the podcast outside of our AER studios. So a big shout out to him for that. We hope to have him back a little bit later on in the season. Maybe we can get some end of season thoughts out of him and see where he stands a little bit later on in the year. He's predicting UNC 38-20. Ben, where do you stand on that aspect?
I like it. I'm not going to differ from it that much. I'm going to give the Syracuse defense a little more credit and the offense a little less credit. I actually think that still Sterling Gilbert is going to have a good year. He really seems to have these guys motivated. I just think it's a lot to ask to go up against this North Carolina defense with all the changes that have gone on with the Syracuse offense recently. So I'm going to go more in the neighborhood of like 35-17, which I know is kind of a cop-out because I pretty much picked the same score as him, but I really liked Hosworth's pick. I just think 35-17, I think maybe we save that field goal. They save that field goal, and the offense doesn't quite click as much as Hosworth thinks.
I don't know how well the Syracuse offense will do, but I think it's right around that three-possession mark for UNC. I think it's going to be a little less than 21. I'm going to put it at – I say Syracuse scores – I like that 20 mark that Hosworth put out there. I'll stick with 20, and then I think they win by 20. So I'll say 40-20 final score, a little bit of an odd final. I think the one thing Syracuse does have going for them is, I mean, UNC's pass game with Sam Howell is outstanding, and their receiving core is really strong, but they match up in with Syracuse's probably best unit on the field in terms of the Syracuse secondary. So I'll be interested to see how that matchup pans out, the immovable object against the whatever force. I'm botching that. The unstoppable force. It's going to be interesting to see who wins in that battle because Howell is outstanding. Newsom is also great, and they've got a lot of assets on the receiving end. But Syracuse's secondary is strong, and they return the vast majority of that in this 3-3-5. They're going to be able to throw some things at them. So I think they're going to be able to keep it reasonable. They're going to keep it under that significant number of 22.5. So 40-20, I'll put it. Ben, we'll go macro here. We'll give our season predictions for whatever it's worth. What do you see the Orange finishing with this year?
I think the Orange will finish with a 6-5 record.
Wow.
I am putting a lot of credit and maybe too much into the new defense. Okay. If Syracuse can figure out how to play this 3-3-5, and I've heard about this from talking with Hosworth, who saw it at West Virginia, and Chris Cartman, who saw it at Arizona State. Early on, especially, teams are going to have no idea what to do. If you only have 1 week to learn defense you've never seen before in your entire life, like, you know, offensive linemen are smart guys, but that's tough. Like, you can't – the best player on the field, Andre Sisco, is playing a position that doesn't exist in most defenses, the Rover. Half the time, you don't know if he's playing safety or linebacker. Your corners could blitz. There's asymmetric blitzing, which I don't want to get into too much because Hartman does a much better job of explaining it than I do in that Tony White episode. But I think this 3-3-5 could stun people this year. And the entire point of it and bringing Tony White in is that he's able to elevate guys above their talent, or at least their supposed talent, according to, you know, all the prospect rating systems and stuff mm-hmm. like that. He's been able to elevate guys, and I think this defense will carry Syracuse to just over 500 at 6-5. However, I think 5-6 would be a success for Syracuse this year as well.
I agree. 5-6 would be a success. I'm up in the air on 4-7 and 5-6. And I think I went high last year when I was up in the air. I'm going to go low this year just because there are so many questions. And I acknowledge that I could be biting my tongue later in the season, but I think they go 4-7 and I don't know where the four wins come from. I can't say they're going to win this game, this game, this game, and this game. They're going to win four games. Some may be above their league. Some losses may be below their league, but They're going to win four games. They'll go 4-7. They could go 5-6. I do think that's feasible for them if a couple of things roll their way and the 3-3-5 works out to be all that it's advertised to be. But I'm not exactly sold on enough of this team to push them above four wins. So I'll go 4-7. Ben, you went 6-5. So we've got some discrepancy here and some middle ground between us. So we'll see who's right come the end of the season. But it all starts Saturday, noon kickoff, Syracuse at North Carolina. Countdown to kickoff on WAER 88.3 FM starting at 11 a.m. And then after the game, you can catch me and Max Chadwick on the double overtime, taking you for a couple of hours, breaking down everything you need to know. And then next week, Ben and I once again right here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Follow along with us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. And, you know, you can find our old podcast. We've got info you need to know on the recruiting class, the 3-3-5, and everything else that has kind of gone on in this offseason at wherever you're getting your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever it may be, or find us on Twitter to get that. Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll catch you next week.
Football season, baby. Let's go.